Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie and John here to bring you another crime story. What's up, bud?
Dude, I'm glad to have you back. You've been a world traveler, spending some time in L.A. and wearing an L.A. Dodgers cap.
Been on the left coast, had to buy a hat because my head was getting sunburned. And going to be honest, it's just about the way it fits. Like, this hat
it's a good looking hat.
Really well.
Like, it's a great hat, but I've never seen you wear Dodgers stuff.
I'm not a Dodgers fan. Go Reds, but this kept my dome from getting crispy and fits good.
And it's not the traditional, like LA traditionally is a blue color. You're wearing a brown LA hat. So it almost looks like the Cleveland Browns went to LA and did some crossover work.
I'll go with that. That's fine. Yeah.
But man, it's good to have you back, and I'm so excited to be in the studio with you. We've got a crime story from my neck of the woods again, Tennessee. Never disappoints.
And I tell you, what caught my eye on this one is the fact that an individual we'll discuss a great deal about was the youngest woman ever on death row. So that's what caught my ear and got me interested in this case. But there's a lot more there than that. I'll just leave it at that for now. But before we get started, I want to give a big thanks to MSGS, maybe Messages, 40th. Over on Apple Podcasts, this 5-star review says, "Me and my friends listen to you guys every night on a call. We always enjoy all of your episodes." All right.
Group listening. Thank you so much. That's awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah. Send us an email. Maybe we'll join the call.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. You can just listen to us.
I would legit love that. So yeah, send us a message. We'll
truecrimecast@gmail.com.
Jamie, I want to say thank you to some folks over on Patreon. Got a lot of growth over there, and it's interesting. You can actually join for free. Now, hear me out. I'm not saying you're going to get content, but you can, like, follow along and see the posts that we make. But in order to actually get to listen, you're going to need to pay the monthly fee. But it is interesting. If you want to just see what it's all about, you can go over there, scroll through, and see what kind of posts we've made and what kind of episodes are there. And if it strikes your fancy and it sounds appealing, you can go ahead and sign up.
Yep, be a good way just to be up to date on what's over there, because there's a lot of exclusive content.
And while we're talking about Patreon, I want to say thank you to Sarah and to Rose. Both of those came in over on Patreon for the $3 level, so they get to see what we create and listen to it.
Awesome.
All that they want. So guys, thank you so much. If you're a Patreon member, we love you, and we couldn't thank you enough.
And can't move on to the episode without giving another shout out to Magic Mind. We are Magic Mind ambassadors, and I think that all boils down to what it's done for us with awareness, with productivity, and all the different projects that we're working on. Magic Mind helps me to stay focused. And we have a new deal here. It's a one-time deal just for True Crime Cast listeners, and it's only accessible through the link that's in our show notes. Our audience can subscribe and try the shots for free. Only pay shipping for the first 3 bottles pack. Now, is a great deal, and then you'll get to experience a dose, 3 doses actually. This is considered a mental performance shot, and you'll get 3 of those with this code. We'll put the link in the show notes, but you can go to magicmind.com/VIP J&J trial. That's magicmind.com/VIP J&J trial to get that free trial of those first 3 bottles.
Guys, it's an incredible product, and Jamie and I would not be ambassadors if we didn't wholeheartedly believe in it and personally use it. So we're not just blowing smoke here.
If you do choose to subscribe, which is what I do, it comes every month without me having to worry about it, as opposed to like medications I have to refill. This just shows up at my door, and if you subscribe, you get free shipping, and it's just a great ease of mind. For me, we talk often about the ingredients and That has not changed. We talk about the matcha and the L-theanine that really just left you to maintain focus. So whether you're just having trouble staying focused at work, staying awake in the afternoon, or you got a new project you want to hone in on, check out that free trial, magicmind.com/VIPJ&J trial to check it out.
All right, guys, we have a case for you from Tennessee. And, man, I'm going to get the ball rolling if you don't care.
Absolutely.
We're going to be talking about Krista Gail Pike. She was born on March 10th, 1976 in Beckley, West Virginia. We've got some good friends in West Virginia, just drove through there this summer, and it is beautiful. But Krista's childhood was not, and undoubtedly, her brutal home life played a part in the person that she was going to become. Krista was the child of Carissa and Emil Glenn Pike. Emil, is that how you would say that?
I'd say Emil.
Emil? I don't know. In West Virginia, it could be Everett, you know? But
yeah,
no, it's E-M-I-L.
Emil. Yeah, if it was just standalone, I would say Emil. But with Glenn Pike, I think it might be Emil.
All right. So this was a hate-filled and neglectful couple who had a really rough relationship. It was frequent cases of abuse. And this was Krista's childhood, and I can tell you, it was a living nightmare for Krista. This couple had been married for 2 years before their first divorce, and a result of Carissa's habits with cheating would come from that, and they would only remarry a year after Carissa's attempted suicide. Their second marriage lasted another 2 years before unceremoniously and expectedly dissolving. Krista's aunt said that she frequently saw her as an infant crawling through piles of dog stool around the house, and on one occasion during a party, she saw Carissa ignoring a young Krista while she was having severe seizures, and the party just continued. They didn't stop it. I think Krista's parents were just so uninvolved in their children's life and so caught up in their own lives and their own issues. They just neglected Krista. So this young kid having a seizure, God knows how long that was happening without any kind of medical treatment. And those of Krista's friends who would come to visit commented later that it was always a home without food, but with an abundance of alcohol. So you can kind of see where the family's priorities are just by looking in the cupboard. Krista's respite from her abusive home came in the form of the occasional stay with her grandmother. This was the only person who ever loved Krista, according to Krista. Though even this would come to an end when her grandmother passed away when she was only 12 years old, an event which would lead to her first suicide attempt. Krista took this news horribly. Life, unfortunately, would only get worse as Krista moved into her teenage years. She continued to be the victim of awful and violent actions. And unfortunately, that was going to set the stage for her becoming violent herself and dueling out her own punishments and torture. Her mother's new boyfriend would frequently abuse her, one going as far as to have charges raised against him after he punched her in the face, though he would settle out of court and he wouldn't face any punishment for that. When staying with her father's new family, she would sexually abuse and molest one of her younger sister-in-laws. This incident didn't lead to any charges, but her father sent her away and didn't allow her to stay with his new family any longer. Krista would later claim that she was sexually assaulted and abused on so many other occasions over the course of her life, though her friends and family doubt the validity of these claims, as most of them openly identify her as a pathological liar. Jamie, you know, is Krista doing some awful stuff? Absolutely. In my experience, it's very possible that she was also sexually abused and is kind of keeping this pattern going.
Especially at that young of an age, and I know you live in this in your day job as a social worker, but those behaviors have to be learned somewhere. Is that a safe assumption?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, you know, as you become a teenager, I think you're exposed to more and more of that. But as a young child, you know it because you've seen it, right? In one incident that we know is factual, Krista and a friend beat a man in the parking lot with sticks after he had previously threatened to rape Krista over the phone. And so he threatened to rape her over the phone, and Krista and a friend retaliated with physical violence.
And there is a line here of defending and protecting yourself versus being the person initiating the violence. And I think that's a line that many people in Krista's life would disagree about which side she happened to be on. There are a lot of people who remember her as a little kid as being bright and her having a bright future in front of her, but her upbringing and the crap she had to go through really led to something different. When she was a sophomore in high school, she was sent to a juvenile facility for a year where she became interested in joining the Job Corps. The Job Corps is a program that's run by the Department of Labor that offers free education and vocational training to people ages 16 to 24. Krista started her education with the Job Corps in the fall of 1994. This is a fantastic program to give people opportunities to contribute to society and to make a life for themselves. While she was there, she became friends with a lady named Kim Ilolo, a fellow classmate. They shared most of the same classes, and her room was just about five doors down the hall from Kim's. They were pretty inseparable for a long time. They spent all of their time outside of class, hanging around, cruising around Knoxville on the free trolley, and really experiencing life as a late teen, almost getting to 20, and really exploring who you're going to be. Kim said during this time, she saw a spark in Krista. Kim was the type of person to go out of their way to help people out. She was very loving and gave a lot of gifts. She wanted her friends to be happy. But she would eventually come to find the other side of Krista, the side that was a result of her abusive upbringing and her years of suffering without adequate treatment. Colleen Slimmer was another lady in the Job Corps. She was born September 20th of 1975 in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, though she spent most of her early life in Florida. Colleen was described by teachers as being mild-mannered and being a sweet girl. She, just like Krista, had come from a broken home, and she had grown up under some difficult circumstances herself. But everybody that knew her said she was incredibly focused and hardworking. Colleen's mother and sisters loved her dearly, and when the time and opportunity came, her mother would help her move so that she could take advantage of this opportunity and be a part of the Job Corps, and she joined in 1994. The day she left Florida was the last day that anybody in her family saw her alive. Krista and Colleen would end up enrolled in the same nursing course at the Knoxville Job Corps Center. After some time there, Colleen would communicate home that things were not going well. She was not enjoying her time there. She claimed that people had been stealing things from her room, and she specifically mentioned that it was two girls and a guy that had been giving her a really hard time. These three individuals were Krista Pike, her new boyfriend, who was Tadarrell Shipp, and another new friend named Shadala Peterson. All of them were students at the Job Corps. This is where the friendship base originated. And Kim was actually the one that introduced Tadarrell to Krista. And their connection was pretty intimate and intense against individuals in their late teens that got physical quickly. Their bond grew stronger. And Krista developed a hatred for somebody that Tadarrell used to have a crush on. And as it turns out, that person was Colleen Slimmer. Despite Tadarrell having completely forgotten about Colleen and moving on to Krista, Krista was very possessive and obsessed, thinking that Tadarrell still wanted to have something to do with Colleen. Kim noticed that Krista had really started turning dark and violent in her new relationship, but she had no idea how far this was going to go.
Jamie, I have a teenage son and a teenage daughter, and I can speak out of experience over the last few months that, you know, there's a lot of jealousy amongst teenagers. But I think when you grow up in such a violent atmosphere, those normal feelings of jealousy can really be, you know, escalated and blown up to something awful, right, and dangerous.
And you don't know how to deal with it. You're not taught the proper channels of, yes, you may want the life or to be with the person somebody else has. You've got to work hard. You got to wait your turn. You got to find other avenues to get out your frustration. But when we get back from our break, we'll talk about Krista advancing beyond threats and actually making a move into violence due to her jealousy.
In January 12th, 1995, Krista makes good on her threats. Krista to Daryl and Shadala would get Colleen away from campus, and right before Krista left campus, she told Kim that the group and Colleen were going to the park to smoke. But then when she left, she kind of twisted her head and gave a smile and a wink, so almost to indicate as if something more sinister was about to happen. So the four of them signed out of the dorm at 8:50 p.m. and began to make their way to Tyson Park. And as they cut through some woods nearby, hiding them from the prying eyes of the city, tensions would begin to rise as Krista begins to accuse Colleen of attempting to steal her boyfriend. Again, Colleen is the ex of Tadaryl, right? As the accusations turned to violence, Colleen attempted to flee but was unsuccessful. She tried to fight back, but this was like a pack of rabid dogs on Colleen. For 30 minutes, the group tortured Colleen. They stabbed her, they slashed her with knives, they beat her, and tortured Colleen. Over the course of the attack, Krista would stab Colleen over 300 times, and this was all the stabbings were done by Krista. Krista repeatedly stabbed Colleen 300 times. She reportedly tried to run away, but every attempt was met with further torture. After stripping Colleen down, Krista held her to the ground as Tadaryl carved a pentagram into Colleen's chest. You know, this is not just a, you know, even if this was just a violent fight, that would be bad enough, but this is unimaginable to get stabbed 300 times. And then as if that isn't enough, you have Tadaryl participating by carving a pentagram into her chest. A
couple notes on that. One is that we've thoroughly discussed the Lily Lid murders over on our other show Paradigm and covered it here on True Crime Cast in several episodes as well. This was during the Satanic Panic, so this pentagram definitely meant a lot more than it probably would today, I think. And also, when I think about stabbing somebody 300 times, I can't imagine how exhausting that would be. So what kind of anger do you have in your heart to put forth that much effort? This is just unfathomable to
me. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think you have to be fueled by hatred, and it's hatred that, thank God, I don't even know, man. Like, that is, it's brutal, and unimaginable. Krista eventually would find a chunk of asphalt and would use that to cave in Colleen's skull. And while she was, you know, this wasn't a one-hit done thing. This was repeatedly hitting Colleen in the skull with this asphalt. And as she was doing so, she repeated, "Do you know who is doing this to you?" And just brutal, man. After all was said and done, this was about 45 minutes of pure torture. The group would abandon Colleen's body deep in the woods, but not before Krista reached through the bloody mess that was Colleen's face and skull and grabbed a fragment of her shattered skull to take with her as a memento.
So, again, this goes back to jealousy, is where it stemmed from. And Krista believed that Tadala still had a thing for Colleen, so she wanted to eliminate her. But this goes so much further than just killing somebody to solve a problem that you, in some twisted way, perceive. This is absolutely, you use the word brutal. We don't often glorify the gore. We could go a lot deeper here, but we're not going to. It's just unimaginable in so many ways. So the three individuals, again, Shadala, Tadaryl, and Krista, went back to their rooms, but their night wasn't really over yet. When Krista got back, she went over to Kim's room and started to tell her about what just happened. Not necessarily confessing to get it off her chest, but complaining about it. She told Kim, and this is a quote, she said, "That bitch wouldn't die," and that she slit her throat 9 times and stabbed her in the back. So she's not going over to say, I can't believe we did this. I don't know what to do. She's saying, man, that was a lot harder than I thought it would be. Obviously, Kim is shocked by this and stays completely silent. She's got this person in front of her saying, I just cut somebody up. So she's afraid. Krista eventually would show her the skull fragment that she took from the scene, and she paraded it around like it was a trophy. Krista also shared that they tried to do their best to wash off at a gas station on the way back to the dorm, and that if Kim shared anything that she had just been told, then they would kill her too. And when she left Kim, she still had that little demented smirk on her face and winked at her. The next morning, the body of Colleen Slimmer was discovered in the woods. Testimony states that it was hardly recognizable as even being a human being. The crime wasn't hard to track back to the group, as Krista had continued to show off this piece of Colleen's skull to anybody that would listen to her at the Job Corps in the next few days. Testimony of many students and faculty members combined with the school logs showing that they all left and checked out of the dorm together and only three of them came back meant that within 36 hours, Krista, Tadaryl, and Shadala were already under arrest for the murder of Colleen Slimmer. Randy York, who was the criminal investigator assigned to the case, also identified the pentagram that had been carved into Colleen, which only cemented the trail back to the group, as it was pretty open at the time that the Job Corps students knew that this group talked about openly worshiping Satan. Again, it's the Satanic Panic. Not sure how much truth there is to that, but that does not change at all what they did. While the police contacted Colleen's mother to try to get dental records, they wanted to make sure that this was her. Krista Pike, who is now in custody, confessed to everything. Randy detailed how during her confession, she played out both her own role in the killing and pretended to be Colleen. It's like she was excited to be sharing this story and celebrated the fear that Colleen showed. Bouncing back and forth between pleading for mercy and writhing in pain and then reversing the roles and pretending to be herself, stabbing with a fake knife or a pretend knife, Krista really enjoyed this, and she wasn't hiding what she did even a little bit. She seemed very proud of it.
Surprisingly, this case would go to trial because I figured that they would take some kind of plea deal, but no, it goes to trial. So March 22nd, 1996 would be when this trial would take place. Krista arrived in court, and her demeanor to everyone in there was quite unsettling. She would turn and smile at those who would meet her. You know, if you caught eyes with her and you knew her, she would like smile and wave. And then she would even break into fits of laughter as the facts of this awful murder were being described. She would, you know, if she knew you, she would wave. And it was almost like she was passing you on the street and that you weren't here for the trial and to hear testimony. Kim's testimony was a definite nail in the coffin, as she had seen both the four of them leave and then only three of them return. And with she also had the firsthand experience of retailing Krista's complaints about, you know, Colleen wouldn't die, you know, the B word wouldn't die. And so this was Krista's confession of the night of the actual murder. So Kim was able to share all that with the court.
The jury was able to see the terrifying scenes of the crime, including what remained of Colleen's skull. There was a large gash splitting it from her right ear to the middle of her forehead. There was a large impact on the back left of her skull where she had been struck with a blunt object. Colleen's mother described the horror and grief she felt as the skull was handed from juror to juror, small pieces at a time, and actually they were occasionally flaking off. I'm surprised that they let the jury handle them. I would think that that's an element of evidence that viewing would be enough of. As would be expected, the deliberation was quick, and after only a few days, there was a unanimous verdict where they found Krista Pike guilty for the murder of Colleen Slimmer. On the 30th of March, Colleen was sentenced to death by electrocution for the murder charge and 25 years in prison for the conspiracy charge. The death penalty conviction took only 90 minutes of their decision. Once they decided on the guilt, it only took them an hour and a half to agree that the death penalty should be administered. Again, her being the youngest woman to be put on death row. Next, Tadaryl was sentenced, and he received a life sentence without the possibility of parole, plus 25 years. Shadala, who had in a lot of ways become an informant and had gotten a plea deal, only received probation for pleading guilty to being an accessory after the fact. Thoughts on that piece of it? I mean, we'll go back to Krista in a second, but with Shadala's cooperation, she didn't get any prison time. Tadaryl got forever in prison, and Krista got a death penalty. I know that they really needed or wanted Shadala's testimony, but is it worth that kind of compromise?
Yeah, I mean, I can almost see it both ways. Like, if this kid wasn't directly involved in any of the abuse or torture, I could almost see how her testimony would be beneficial enough to say, you know, you're good. At the same time, man, like, if she participated in any way, I think she needs the same punishment as the other two.
I mean, this is in Tennessee. This is in the mid to late 90s. Going back to the Lily Lid murders, there were three people there who, by all accounts, didn't participate. They were still given a life sentence.
And it's not going to be the last time we're going to reference that case. Just wait till you hear about some things I'm about to talk about. So following the guilty verdict, Krista attempted to appeal her verdict, but in a twist that would surprise pretty much everybody in the case, and certainly went against the advice of her counsel, in June of 2001 and 2002, she would ask for the counts to drop her appeal and then request to be executed via electrocution. So, Jamie, I've never seen this, where basically you're saying, hey, I don't want to appeal this anymore, just go ahead and kill me. I mean,
I think I can't remember the name. I wish I could. But there was one case where as soon as the guy was arrested, he wanted to be executed as quickly as possible. But that didn't come in the middle of appeals. And yeah, this is certainly unique.
Yeah, but that would change again because, you know, the court did grant and put an execution date out there. She was going to be executed on August 19th of 2002, but Krista changed her mind. And on July 8th, 2002, her lawyers would motion to continue the appeal process. In December of 2008, Pike's latest request for a new trial was turned down, and she was returned to death row. And with this denial, Krista was no longer allowed appeals under the rules and procedures of the state of Tennessee's criminal justice system. So in May of 2014, her legal team sought to basically commute the sentence from death in prison on the following grounds. Number one, they said that she had ineffective assistance of counsel. They claimed that she had mental health issues and that capital punishment as administered in Tennessee is unconstitutional. So the U.S. District Judge Harry Mattis Jr. ruled on March 11th, 2016, that the commute would be denied and rejected on all grounds. So in August of 2019, the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit panel, after hearing the same attempted appeal, upheld Judge Mattis Jr.'s decision. So basically, she's going to be spending the rest of her life and will die in prison. While Krista continually tried to escape her death sentence, she did not make any attempts to evade trouble in prison. And we've spoke about the Lily Lid case, and some of them in the six are model citizens in prison. Some of them, not so much. Krista was sent ultimately to the Deborah K. Johnson Rehab Center in Nashville. This was a prison for women. And there she was to await her execution. She was kept confined 23 hours a day and only given a 1 hour exercise outdoors time. Krista is the only woman facing execution in the state of Tennessee. On August 24th, 2001, Krista attacked and attempted to strangle a fellow inmate named Patricia Jones with a shoestring and nearly succeeded in choking her to death. The attack was spurred on when Patricia mocked the inmate that he had a relationship with. She said that Krista had formed another relationship with an inmate named Natasha Cornett. Any bells ring there?
From the Lilylid murders, Natasha in a lot of ways was looked at as the leader of that group, even though she wasn't the one that carried out the execution of the Lilylid family. She was kind of the face of, as it portrayed in the media, a Satan worshiping murdering group. So yeah, this is it can't get any closer related than that, can it?
Yeah. So a little bit about Patricia Jones. Maybe this is a case we need to put on our radar, but she's serving a life sentence for the 1994 murder of 84-year-old Alberta Coker. That was in Knoxville, Tennessee. Krista was given her chance when a fire broke out at the facility, and guards, without thinking, isolated Krista, Natasha, and Patricia in the same room, all on their own without any supervision. Prison officers stopped the attack, but barely pulled Patricia back from the brink of death. When they arrived, she was no longer breathing. Much like before, Krista did not hide her crimes. She owned up to the attack on the spot when asked about it by the guards. On August 12, 2004, Krista was convicted of attempted first-degree murder, which added 25 years to her death sentence.
Do you buy that the guards didn't know what they were doing there? Or is there a chance that they just allowed this to happen?
I mean, is it one of those situations where they put three in a room and hoped only one or two came back out?
Krista had reached out and written to a lot of men while she was in prison, even going so far as to convince two men. One was from out of state, and one was actually a correctional officer to help her escape from prison. A guy named Justin Heflin, who was the correctional officer, was meant to duplicate a prison key, while Donald Cohut was meant to help her escape the state. While full details of the plan haven't been released because there are security concerns involved, the prison caught wind of this plot to escape and shut it down before it could go anywhere. Both Justin and Donald would end up being arrested. Donald's now serving a 7-year sentence for bribery, official misconduct, and conspiracy to commit escape, while Justin was only terminated from his position as a correctional officer after aiding the investigation. Again, he got a deal for speaking up. The date for Krista's execution was supposed to be set by 2020, but the state says that due to delays caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, a date can still not be set for her execution. Krista's mind was twisted, obviously, by a childhood of pain, abuse, and suffering. But like we always say, there are a lot of people that have that kind of childhood and don't grow up to be killers. This does not excuse or justify the horrific acts that she inflicted upon Colleen Slimmer for what seemed to be her own joy and vile ambitions. Krista does not believe that she'll ever see the electric chair. She continues to live her life behind bars as if she's invincible, and she acts like she's a celebrity within the walls of that prison. Colleen Slimmer's mom, whose name is Mae Martinez, says she'll never be able to forgive the monster that murdered her daughter. She can't wait to hold up Colleen's picture to Krista as she's being executed. And she says if it was up to her, the same should be done to Krista as Krista did to Colleen. So she should be tortured and abused and stabbed to death. That's what she deserves, according to Colleen's mom. If Pike is executed, she would be the first woman to be executed in the state of Tennessee in roughly 200 years. That's a long time to go without executing somebody. And again, I said woman. They just haven't executed a woman in 200 years. I look across, we talked about Chad Daybell being given a death sentence. We just don't see a lot of people being executed right now. So I'm not confident she's going to be executed either.
We don't, and especially by electric chair. You know, I know that Tennessee has executed people by lethal injection. So I'm interested to see, like, is her sentence very specific? Like, if they didn't want to do the electric chair, would they have to do any kind of new sentencing to do lethal injection?
Great question.
I mean, just keep her in prison forever.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't need to go through the court system anymore, but my goodness.
Yeah. And like I said, she had a rough childhood. Does not justify or excuse any of this. So this is a brutal crime. She tried to get some immunity based on her age, but she was 18 when this happened. So that's not even a discussion, in my opinion, of if you carried this out and you are 18, you should be tried as an adult. At this time, I think Colleen was 19. So they were both very young and both of their lives were thrown away that day.
Yeah. I know Kentucky still has a Job Corps. It is a federally funded program. Most of the participants in Kentucky come from the foster care system. So it's kind of like a, you know, you turn 18 and college isn't really for you. This is almost like a trade school, but has a dormitory that you can stay in. And it sounds like this was a similar setup to what Kentucky has. So
great program.
Yeah.
Happy that we have it.
Yep. But basically it's kids from similar walks of life who may have found themselves in either trouble themselves or came from homes with trouble in it. And they all live in a dorm room together. And this is just awful and should never, ever have happened.
Would love to hear what you all think. If you disagree with us, if you think that she should be executed soon, or if you think she will be. Again, she was given that sentence, so she should be based on the sentence. But will she be killed, and do you have any other thoughts on this brutal case? Again, we held back on a lot of the gruesome details, so you can find those on your own, but regardless, we couldn't share the story without some graphic content.
Guys, we really appreciate you sticking around with us. We're trying to do some more to say thank you. We're releasing a couple of episodes every week. On top of our Tuesday show, we're doing a Wednesday and Friday True Crime to Go. And we're trying to release as many interviews as we can for Monday bonus episodes. All that to say, check your feed and make sure you subscribe, because you could be missing a lot of extra content.
And I will say, we've got some interviews scheduled that I am excited out of my mind about. Yesterday's episode was with Gary Linnemeyer to talk about reinvestigating the Grant Solomon case. Last week was Brett Nallis from the prosecutors, and we've got some scheduled that are fantastic. So make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss out on that. We really appreciate you listening and are thankful for your support.
And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.